edutainment simply for me means tactical variety. So ways to edutain would be changing your voice, like simply having vocal heterogeneity, bringing in a visual. That's edutainment. And if someone is too introverted, or what was the word, normal to do that, well, I question then how you go through life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Why Distance Learning, the podcast where we interview distance learning professionals, students, administrators, people who are related in some way to this amazing medium of ours and the incredible educational opportunities that come along with it. Today, we have a very special guest. His name is Michael Alasso. Welcome, Michael. How are you today?
Hello, Seth. It's nice to see you again. My curiosity is burning. I always want to be close to you. So why distance learning?
Why? Yay! Learning?
All right, that's it. That's the episode, guys.
Yes.
I love that you came prepared with that. And like the first words I heard out of your mouth when I met you were in song. So that feels appropriate. I met you at a Vistage meeting. You came around and spoke to us about being your best self. I took a couple of really inspirational notes from that talk. One of them was just watching the way that you were able to observe people so very, very closely and give back to them in real time some of the incredible things that they were doing. Your sense of noticing was just incredible. And it's something that I've tried to emulate since our meeting, which was several months ago now. And another thing that really stuck with me is you talked about being your best self. And one of the things that you said was, are you going to let any of these things that happened to you today, any of these little things that might be going wrong in your life, are you going to let that be the reason that you don't bring your best self today? And I've had that thought several times since we met, and it has helped me through some tough days when I was like, I feel like moping. I feel like being my worst self today because I feel sorry for myself. and then I get into a situation where I'm like, no, like I'm not going to let that be the excuse to not be my best self. So thank you for that, Michael.
Thank you, Seth. I watch people closely to give them feedback in real time. I'm going to tell my marketing department that sentence. That was beautiful. You're deeply observant, you're perspicacious, and you're able to articulate what you see and hear. And I thought you were just good looking and vapid.
Gosh, now I'm blushing. If you're watching the video, I did an exercise the other day with some of my employees where I asked them if there was anything that you could do, any sort of secret talent or secret little activity that you love, and there were no ramifications of you just diving into it and doing it more, what would it be? And I had them answer, and then I like drilled into it. I was like, okay, why? What is the feeling that you get when you get that? And I asked all these follow-up questions, and I was able from that to tease out all of these like core values of theirs, like different things that they felt that I felt really came through when they were talking about it. And it's because someone did that same thing to me. The funny thing is the thing that I said, the thing that I would do more of if I had the ability to just like do it, no ramifications, was to podcast more. I really enjoy podcasting. It's a lot of fun.
Yes.
And he was able to pull out for me that like, I enjoy the initial stage of identifying something awesome in someone else and wanting to bring them on and talk to them more about that, that natural curiosity that I have towards understanding where that person's coming from. And, you know, many, many other things about this. We don't have to get too much into the craft of podcasting. but when I was doing that with my employees, I was practicing what you taught me that day. I was practicing the ability to articulate what you're noticing in real time and really being present with other people. And I do think that there is an extension of that that is applicable to any teacher in any setting, but especially in the distance learning context, which we have brought you on to talk about here today. And the reason we brought you on is because during the pandemic, you made a shift. You are a speaker who goes around to across the country, motivating CEOs to be their best selves. And during the pandemic, you had to shift, like everybody else, to the virtual space. And like it is no surprise to me that you were able to then take that experience and turn it in to something beautiful and creative. And what you ended up with was a guide for being your best virtual self. And so that's why we're here today. And thank you so much for being here. I do want to ask you off the bat, in those moments that you've had in a virtual setting, can you describe to us what we call a golden moment, a moment when you feel like you were able to get somewhere because of the virtual setting, because you're not in the same geographic space as someone else, because you're sharing the time with someone that you otherwise wouldn't be able to share with? Can you tell us a story of a golden moment that you have experienced over this medium?
Unfortunately, Seth, people have such low expectations when the virtual encounters begin, that golden moments are plentiful and abundant every day, because I was locked down for 59 weeks. I'm from New England, and so we really had COVID in New England. So we really did shut things down. And so in that 59 weeks, to reinforce what you said, Seth, I was supposed to do a keynote in New Hampshire on March 13th, 2020. And I had done a live performance in Providence, Rhode Island on March 12th. I went out with a client who was out of town from Houston, took me out to dinner that night, hug. I went home, drove up to my home on the coast of Maine. The keynote in New Hampshire was canceled, and within 72 hours, I had 9 keynotes canceled. And so I'm a small business. I'm not like a lot of your listeners. Keynote's my high ticket item. Losing 9 of those in a single weekend, huge percentage of my annual income. So you're right. I sat and moped for about 3 or 4 hours. Then I said, grow up. You're a hypocrite. Start adapting. And I instantly turned you and your best day to you and your best virtual day. And in that 59-week period, I did 299 workshops and keynotes, more than any other 59-week period. Thank you, Allison, of my entire career. And I'll probably never match that again. Well, you know, it was easy. Easy in quotes. You flew to the UK at 5 in the morning. Then you flew to New York at 9. Then you flew to Minneapolis at 11:30. Flew to LA at 3, had dinner, and then flew to Melbourne, Australia to do Planet Fitness Australia at 10:30 at night. Go to bed, wake up, rinse, repeat, recycle. And so that was the life I was doing. And a golden moment, Seth, was the first group I did was that following Monday. I had already, by Monday, the 16th of March, 2020, I did a company in Birmingham, Alabama. But it was a little bit of a cheat. I was supposed to go to Birmingham anyway. The CEO and I are buddies. His people all knew me. It was a small group. We were horrible. Our lighting was bad. Our camera positions were bad. But we got something out of it because of existing relationships. The first group I did where I didn't know anybody was that Thursday, 6 days after my lockdown, and was a Vistage group in Philadelphia.
Yay, Philly!
You're ready, Allison.
I can't wait. Yay.
We're all getting on the screen. We're all futzing. First person to unmute was the CEO. She unmutes. She leans toward the camera and she says, I hope this isn't going to be about coronavirus the whole time. And then she mutes.
There's putting out the expectation right there.
Bingo, Allison, because think about it. What was she saying? She was saying, roller skate, monkey. Dance for me, white boy. And so the golden moment was, oh my gosh, this woman had given me the greatest gift ever. Here I am, a director. I've done countless videos, both in front and behind the camera. I'm an improviser. I do comedy. I coach executives one-on-one. I do keynotes. I do workshops. This is like God took all my gifts, put in one box, tied a big bow around it, and said, get busy. And so that golden moment was, I realized in order to be successful virtually, I had to be an entertainer. That if I ever deleted the entertainment component of a virtual presentation, I was going to disappear and be like everyone else. And the last thing in the world I want to be is like everyone else. So, Seth, if I had to pick one moment, because it was so early in that process, that's March 19th, that wonderful CEO from Philadelphia gave a giant present. It did not make up for the Eagles beating the Patriots in that Super Bowl in 2018, but it was still a nice moment.
Oh, my goodness. Just bringing in all the good foreshadowing for the seasons in which we are in. But also, I'm so excited. I'm so excited not only about the gifts that come from Philadelphia, but that idea. We were talking about this a little bit before, the idea of what I call edutainment, which can sometimes feel like a scary word. But actually, the idea of the entertainment value of making, how do you bring in a group of individuals with a distance between you, whether you're on stage in person or you're in this virtual medium, how does that happen? And a lot of times that's the joke. Even if it's the joke you're going to laugh at or make against yourself, which was a lot of times what I did. I was telling Seth and Tammy earlier, I used to have to teach about mummification through an archaeological lens. And I like put on, I had an outfit, I had cadavers I was working with. And a lot of that was me bringing kids in to talk about what was happening in their textbook, kind of allowing a laugh, allowing them to enjoy themselves as they had this intrinsic learning moment. And I think it's really important to have that entertainment value, whether it's for adults or students, because or student-aged individuals, because the idea is really how do you engage a group of people? And sometimes it's just laughter, relaxing, making sure it's okay to remind everyone we're human. And being human is just sharing and allowing that space to learn from one another.
Well, you know, it's that what you said, Allison, is really moving to me. A project that I've done for many years is I spend a whole day in the inner city schools of Boston teaching improv to inner city kids. And the kids who go to public schools in Boston, like any major city, they're generally poor. They're often from one parent families, and they come in miserable. And they look at me as looking like someone who's a white suburban boy who hasn't ever struggled in his life. And they resent me from the get-go. And one of the things I do is I see them and hear them. I learn their names right away. And many of them have unusual names. And most of the time, teachers don't even take the time to learn and pronounce their unusual name correctly. And here I was, this strange dude that came in, and then I did theater games with them. And they're 14, 15, 16 years old. They were resentful. They did not want to do it. And I'll try not to cry when I say this. Every year, I'd walk out the door at the end of 90 minutes, and kids would follow me out the door and saying, "Are you coming back again, mister? Are you gonna come back?" And it's just heart-wrenching how a little bit of joy, a little bit of fun, a little bit of warmth, and then doing what a very famous person I know and love and respect said. His first name is Seth. He said, "Enjoy the initial stage of finding something awesome in someone." And right. So what I did was do that for each child in that room. And all anyone really wants is to be seen and heard. And that was the problem with the whole virtual movement, is that many, many leaders did not know how to make people feel seen and heard. Teachers, adults, teaching adults. And one way of doing that is to call people by their name.
Yeah.
Tell them something beautiful you see in them.
Yes.
And so, Allison, that really struck me. And Seth, I apologize for interrupting, but Allison just got me right in the heart with that one.
Oh, you just got me right in the heart back, because those are the moments of privilege as a teacher when you get those connections. And I'll try to, I'm an emotional person, so I'll try to hold it back to the idea. Some of those are, you know, those moments where you're able to connect, whether in person or at a distance. It's you know, it teaches you so much about yourself too, your teaching practice, your engagement practice. And I think that's with distance learning or with the medium that became in 2020, what I call the digital pivot. We all had to kind of familiarize ourselves with those that weren't familiar. There were some really interesting opportunities for people that wouldn't always, you know, like you were saying, not always engage even when you were in person, but in private, that chat feature, if they could ask a question privately, or even when we were teaching on webinar before people knew it was safe to turn on cameras in the classroom, just calling out their name. We have someone at CILC, the Center for Interactive Learning and Collaboration, where Tammy and I work. His name's Austin. And if he hear, he's a homebound student for medical reasons. And when he hears his name being called out, he gets so excited to just know that his name is enough of an acknowledgement to say, you're in our community today. How are you feeling, Austin? That is exciting for these students to just start engaging, students and adults, because I've been in the same idea with adult learners as well, where all of a sudden they're engaging in different ways, whether microphone or chat. And I do think that that also represents a couple challenges that come up with the medium of distance learning. So I guess one of the ways we balance the first part of the podcast is not just what are some golden moments, but during your time moving into this medium, are there any persistent challenges that you've seen kind of come up that you've had to work to hurdle over?
Yes. What happens is you have to resist playing the obstacle. So in theater, I have these 35 secret weapons to help you be you on your best day. So secret weapon number 16 is objective. Secret weapon number 18 is obstacle. So in theater, Allison, if I were coaching you and Seth in a scene from a play, I wouldn't talk about plot. I wouldn't talk about theme, a little bit about character. Mostly I'd talk about objective. I'd say, Allison, what do you want from Seth? Seth, what do you want from Allison? If I took you both to a professional theater tonight and you wanted to impress the actors and you got to meet them afterwards, you'd say, I really enjoyed your performance and your objectives were so strong and clear. Oh, they'd pass out on the sidewalk. So that's all we talk about is objective. Now, inherent with objectives is another word that we call tactics, which is secret weapon 17. So if you're trying to get Seth to leave the room, my next question is going to be, how are you going to do that, Allison? And then we have a multiplicity of tactics. The last word is obstacle. And that's the spirit of your question. What prevents you from getting what you want from Seth? So what I find in virtual learning is that many teachers, many leaders, many communicators, speakers play the obstacle instead of playing the objective. Oh, we're not in person, so I can't see and feel your whole embodiment. Oh, I can't see the stimuli that's around you. Wah, 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 wah. Play the obstacle. Oh, you're lighting. Stop playing the obstacle and play the objective. But in order to play the objective, you have to understand what your objective is. So what I find the best virtual teachers are people who say out loud at the beginning of the meeting, if this is a successful meeting, all of you will walk away from the screen and what is it that they will do? What is the measure of our success today? And once you say that, now we're all engaged in the same thing. So for me, the biggest obstacle is people who don't state objectives, who then end up playing the obstacle. I can't. Tammy's camera is fuzzy. I don't really see her. So I can't read her body language. So how do I know what to say? Well, why don't you talk to her? Why don't you ask her? Stop whining and play the objective. Allison, did I misunderstand your question?
I think that's a perfect way to answer the question. Tammy and I actually wrote a whole book about what that actually being our objective, being like, listen, it is just a tool. Put it in your tool belt. Let's go. It didn't need to come in like a wrecking ball. It's here. Come
it
on.
Came in like a wrecking ball.
Miley, I know. Sometimes it's just like, and the climb you could put in there too. I feel like that took me a lot through 2020.
Oh my gosh. This episode...
Don't even tempt me. Spotify playlist.
It feels like a party in the USA. It really does.
Another great one. It's all of her iterations too.
Michael, that that story, it speaks to your experience as a teacher, right? Like one of the things that we think about is the objective. I really love that you talked about the obstacle piece, because one of the keys that I always talk about for distance learning, the very first step for people is just believe, right? Just believe that you can accomplish what you would in any other setting in this particular setting. And then once you get to that level, then you can start playing with what you can do that's even greater than what you can do in a real life setting, right? So I love that you captured that piece. I want to back up a little bit too, because you mentioned the word edutainment, Allison. And I have always said—
I hope I don't get in trouble.
Well, I've always said that that's one of our almost responsibilities, right? Like if the performance element can help any given teacher in the classroom, I think that's true, but it's not necessarily a necessity. But I think that in the two-dimensional space of distance learning, it is almost a necessity for teachers to have some sort of performance element. And that's why it's so valuable to have someone like Michael here on the podcast here today. But another element of it that I think you spoke of there, Allison, is the, and you too, Michael, is the relationship element. It's like it's edutainment with that extra component of necessitating the connection, the human connection that results when you actually show a genuine interest in someone. And you're able to do that in a live setting in the way that you can't in a lot of other, you know, asynchronous or digital learning settings, right? So I just wanted to tie that together because I think that all of those things are super valuable to think about for anybody who's operating in this setting. A question I have for you, Michael, you know, obviously you have personality that just oozes off of the screen.
Yes.
And I think that our listeners are going to hear that too, with your musical outbursts and storytelling. But for like, you know, for the normies out there, for like people who don't have a background in musical theater or performance, like what are some tips that you have for educators in this medium to come off as engaging, approachable, and impactful?
Introverts from introverts. Seth, the only thing you said that I don't like is that the edutainment is almost a necessity. I don't agree with you. I think it's a necessity. Now, it doesn't have to be Michael Alasso edutainment, where all God's children are different. See, remember, edutainment simply means tactical variety. It simply means I can't be mono-tactical. I can't say the six ways of connecting with people over a virtual meeting are. Now, it's not that I'm necessarily knocking that. That is a tactic, though. And the teacher who does that for 60 straight minutes is not respecting her or his students. And so the edutainment simply for me means tactical variety. So ways to edutain would be changing your voice. Like simply having vocal heterogeneity, bringing in a visual, that's edutainment. Wearing a hat could be edutainment. Body language could be edutainment. And if someone is too introverted or what was the word, normal to do that, well, I question then how you go through life. You know, it's you have to dip into the pool that you have and then go beyond. Do you really care for your students? Do you love them? Do you love them enough to go outside your comfort zone? Because if you're only going to live inside your comfort zone, then I want to challenge your love for your students. It's what the virtual world, the distance learning, has forced us to do is go outside our comfort zone and heighten the stakes. It has to be more important. So everything we have to do in person, we have to do on the screen, except with an exponent next to it.
Yeah, it's more.
And so don't give people a free pass. And so the list is huge. I could leave the screen and then pop back in the screen.
Yes.
Anyone can do that. You don't have to be super musical theater oriented to do that. You do have to be creative a little bit, and creativity, all great teachers have a little bit of creativity in there. It's one of the skills we need to teach. So sorry to be so hard-ass about it, Seth. There needs to be let's not compare ourselves to one another. Let's compare ourselves to ourselves. Let's decide, what have I done for years and years while I've been teaching or when I first started teaching, and what can I continue doing from that that's wonderful? And now what do I want to add to my toolbox?
Yes.
What's the new thing I want to do?
And it only improves your in-person practice in a way when you push yourself digitally. And in some cases, it's almost, I remember there when you said your schedule at the beginning of COVID, I was like, oh my goodness, I remember the days of those schedules and I love them. And I love that I could sleep in my studio because it was at home. And so it made it all that much more possible. But it is, and then, but when you did get back in person, it was almost like, we are here, we are talking, and it made people, it was like electric, it became electric, both, you know, once you got to hone this distance learning as well as the, you know, impacting it in person as well. So I agree, edutainment isn't a bad word, and sometimes it gets this bad rap, and it, I don't understand why that happens.
Well, because people put the wrong label on it. You know, Michael Lasso screaming wrecking ball in the middle of a meeting, I can't do that. Well, nor do I want you to do that. That's my brand.
Yes.
Your brand. What you do. You know, it's, I don't want you to do that. People do, you know, people do macrame. It would take me 38 years to do a macrame anything. Some people are very talented with that. Imagine if you popped some creation that you did on the screen as a metaphor, as an important moment. The vessel is virtually infinite of how you can tap in, but you do have to say, what can I do more than I've always done?
And I like what you just said about brand. And I wonder, when did you discover that this was your brand? Was it always apparent to you? And do you have any advice for people who are listening to this and might be like, oh, I'm not sure what that is for me. Like, how would they find their brand?
I agree. And follow-up questions, sorry, just to add, just because I was thinking similarly, Seth, the idea of you've worked with so many different professionals, like how do you help them if that is novel for them to really develop that and feel, get to that confident level to embrace that part of themselves?
Dive into the second part of that first. What Allison asked is, you have to get folks to trust you. And so you have to demonstrate a belief in them first. So I am a beauty gatherer. Why God put me on the earth was to go out in the world and gather beauty. So I start by gathering beauty. Seth teases me about it, but I look at Seth and I instantly can find what he does excellently. What's beautiful about him, inside, outside, activity, how he dresses, how he walks. And I'm not afraid to say that. So when you start gathering beauty and telling people authentically with truth, specificity, and positivity about what their beauty is, they become a little more open and vulnerable to you. You have to do all three. It has to be truthful, specific, and positive. Can't do two of the three. Can't do one of the three. So that begins the relationship. And think about it, you guys. I grew up in a blue-collar family. So I grew up in a town called Arlington, Massachusetts. My dad was a fireman, and everybody was either Catholic, Irish or Italian Catholic. Everybody was white. Everybody was Christian, Catholic, really. And if you didn't play sports as a kid and you were a boy, you got called names. And so I started in a place of repression. I started, and both my brothers were superstar jocks, multi-sport jocks. My father was a multi-sport jock, lean, muscular, masculine. And I was this nerdy, intellectual, middle child, skinny. So I repressed everything. So I did track when I was in high school. I was awful. I hated it. I was terrible. I did it because you were supposed to do sports. And it wasn't until my senior year of high school that I did theater for the first time. And you want to know why? It's really horrible why. I was sleeping with a beautiful girl. It took that to get me to do theater.
Your muse. You just had to find a muse.
But Allison, I think what one thing I said to myself is, maybe why I'm on this earth is to help other kids identify these things they want to do that might be outside the box a little younger, so they can get going and feel that joy and that happiness sooner and not wait until they have a hot girlfriend to make them feel that they're valued or they're worthwhile. And so, you know, I repressed it. And so, Seth, that was the first step, is in order to feel accepted and I could try these things, I needed another person to make me feel of value. And I guess I understand that, but it's kind of sad for me. I wish I could have found that in myself. My parents were, they didn't discourage me. It was all in my head. I created my own head trash and from the culture I was in. And so once I was successful, once I was with someone who believed in me, then success breeds success. Then you get the confidence. It's all about confidence and belief in yourself. And once that starts happening, away you go. And then you want more. You're able to get through those demons. You really want to dance like no one's watching you. And so that's what I started teaching people. So I started teaching people that. And I started, my first challenge was grade 7, 8, and 9. I started right with the hardest age in the world. Because those kids, all they want to do is blend. And I'm making a gross generalization, of course. Many want to blend. They want to wear the same clothes other kids wear, talk the same language. Please don't say hi to me in the mall. That's embarrassing. And that is counterproductive to leadership and courage. And so what I decided to do was I always chose plays where I could cast authentically, where I'd cast the heavy girl, the gay boy who didn't know he was gay, the jockey male athlete, the pretty girl cheerleader. I cast everybody. And there were no sympathy roles. I cast them in a role where they could kill it, where they could be excellent. And so then what happened? People around them knew that the team couldn't exist without the excellence of that other person. Mm. So then all those silly secondary school cliques start to dissolve when I need these other people in order to create the whole. That required a lot of perspicacity on my part to choose the right plays, to make sure I didn't fall prey to parental pressure, administrative pressure, to cast the child that was the most excellent for the role, and in my audition process, give them the tools to be excellent. And it was really the secret of my success. And so to this day, remember, I'm 103. So this was in the early 17th century. And so to this day, I get letters from kids saying, Mr. Olasso, you changed my life because you believed in me. So what's the point of that if you don't pass it on?
Right.
And so one of the reasons why I moved from education to this stage is that I think I have an opportunity to touch more people in this stage. Because when I coach a CEO to believe in this, think of all the people the CEO influences.
Yeah.
Think of Seth. You took what you took away from me, and you've already used it in a podcast, talked about it. So you probably changed lives during that podcast. And think about the trickle-down of that effect. So Seth, did I get off track of what you wanted me to address?
No, no, it's beautiful. I mean, I love the idea of casting people in the right role. I think there are a lot of extensions of that thinking that go into education. It goes into organizational leadership. You know, there are jobs that exist across this world that are perfect for some people. And it takes being able to really notice the beauty in someone, what they're really good at, to be able to match that person to that role, whether you are giving classroom jobs to a first grader or picking your C-suite, right? Like that basic concept of being able to notice truly and deeply where people are coming from is the building block to all of that. So I love that.
See why I love you? See, that's your gift. But that leap that you made, your perspicacity to make that comparison with the first grade kid who gets an assignment in the class, which was a brilliant analogy, because when that's a mercy pity job, all the other kids know it. And yet if you choose that kid who maybe isn't the big sung obvious choice in the class, but you have looked deep into his or her soul and know that they're going to kick butt when they get that job and do a great job, man, have you changed the world in that single moment.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I got goosebumps.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I did too. I was also thinking a little bit as with distance learning being a medium that's becoming more familiar with others, I think that's also nice to consider about your own team. Maybe there's somebody that's really, you know, they thrive better in person or they thrive on camera. They just have that electricity. They are ready. They want, they feel like they're in the same room. And I think that that's sometimes not everybody needs to be best in both mediums. Just being able to recognize that is an important part of being a team player. We work with some content providers and some of them are like, we have teams that are ready to go. And I'm like, yes, those are awesome. That's so exciting. The training. But in some cases they're like, nope, it's me or it's me and my person. And we just do this. We know how to make this connection. I think it's just so valuable to recognize that in someone, especially in a medium like distance learning, which isn't necessarily, you know, on the news live broadcasting. It's not the idea, you know, while they're very high quality broadcasts that are educationally valuable, professional learning valuable, it's just the idea of it being different than a television production. You have a little bit more flexibility in the way that you can engage and be interactive. So I think that it's really important just to recognize that talent, because sometimes it's innate and then sometimes it's just, you just need to open the box a little bit to give them, like you said, those jobs that they'll really kick butt at. And then they'll just be like, yes, this is how I'm here. I see myself. Just think it's so exciting.
Well, and Allison, what I like about what you're saying is think about it with distance learning. Like I'm looking at you in your frame now. And what I'm looking at is what you have on the shelves, the greenery that's around Seth, like Seth is in the forest of Sethness.
Yes.
No, I look at that and I have to say that out loud and appreciate and enjoy, because it's so much about making people feel seen and heard. And sometimes it's simply showing up and saying out loud what you see. And then people start to blossom. And virtually when you do that, people get closer to the screen, they put their phone down, they stop looking out the window at their dog playing in the backyard, and they suddenly connect with you because you're noticing them. It's magic.
All right, we are going to let you go soon, but before we do, we ask everyone our titular question, which is why distance learning? Why this medium?
If you waited until the moment where you could show up in person to make a difference each time, you would contact far fewer people. One of my favorite characters in the Old Testament is a character named Jabez. And I apologize to your listening audience. I'm not a biblical scholar. But Jabez speaks to me. And this is the Michael version, so biblical scholars, don't get angry at me. The Michael version of the Jabez story is that he goes to God and he says, oh, God, I'm just your humble servant. I'll do whatever you tell me to do. Oh, please, I'm a nobody. And God says, Jabez, shut up. Get your butt moving out of here. Go spread the word. Expand your territory. And why I think this distance learning is so important is it gives us the opportunity to expand our territory. We hit many, many more people with distance learning than if we waited till our schedule gave us the moment to show up there in person. And that's what I think is so earth-shattering about it. Our territory gets larger and larger, and we touch more and more lives and make a difference in the world.
Yeah. That impact piece, which you spoke about a lot today. Well, thank you so much, Michael. Allison, do you have any last questions for Michael before we let him go?
No, just so grateful that you were here to spend the time. I feel like I learned so much and feel so inspired right now. I'm going to like cry and smile for the rest of the night. So thank you so much for this time. So seriously inspiring.
Thank you so much for being here, Michael. Really appreciate you.
Seth, you hang around with lovely, lovely human beings. Allison, you're so bloody intelligent.
Oh,
I love your syntax. I love the way you speak. Your vocabulary is abstruse and available at the same time.
Thank you.
I think you elevate your audience by that. And because what you do is you add so much joy to the erudition that people really love that. And
Thank
they
you.
Look to you as a leader. And you, Seth, you're just a lovely, lovely human being. And so, yeah, as gifted as you are, for me, I gravitate toward you because you're a good human. And so thank you, all three of you.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so
much. Come back again and again.
Yes, all the times.
Much love, you guys. Enjoy the rest of
your
day.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
If you want to support the podcast, please rate it or leave us a review. If you want to know the answer to the question, why distance learning, check out the people we highlight on this podcast. These are the people who are leveraging this amazing technology to truly transform the learning experience. Why distance learning? Because it's awesome. See you next time.